Welcome to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. I'm Wendy Grinberg, Parenting Specialist. Today, our guest expert is Dr. Shana Ehrenberg, the co-founder and president of the Board of Directors of the Libenu Foundation, which is an independent living facility in Chicago for Jewish adults with special needs. She's the chairman of the Department of Education and professor at Blitzstein Institute of Hebrew Theological College in Chicago. And she maintains a private practice for children and adults with special needs. She was also a national honoree in the 2011 Jewish Community Hero Contest, and she's helped us create some of our special needs resources at the Union for Reform Judaism. This is part two of our conversation. We discuss addressing the social-emotional needs of kids with special needs and the fine line between being sympathetic and dismissive. You talked briefly about kids being included socially with mm-hmm. their peers. What can parents of special needs kids do to help with that, and what can the other parents in the community do?
Well, that's a great question, because I think that the social-emotional development is equally important as the development of academic skills, because quite honestly, you know, when you get out of school at the end of whatever it is, 12 years, 13 years, you need to have your academic skills. You need to be able to read, you need to be able to write, you need to be able to do mathematics, but you also need to be able to socialize and get along with people in a work in a social environment. And very often that's the area that ends up being neglected in the push towards everything else, all the therapies and all the academic interventions and so on. I hear from parents all the time, oh my goodness, I took my child to this play group and, you know, he was on the floor, you know, kicking and screaming, and the other kids were trying to play and the mothers were kind of, you know, pulling back, and it was very awkward and I never went back. It's important if someone's going to go into an unstructured play group like that, just with peers, that you pick the peers that are going to be understanding and accepting of your child. That's really critical, because you don't want to go there with your child and feel like this was a disaster. It's also important to talk to different therapists. So, you know, for example, in our community, we have a number of therapists that actually do that type of work. They're speech and language therapists. They work with, you know, children on the autism spectrum, and they run social groups that actually teach those social skills. So they teach language. They teach conversational exchange. They teach reciprocity and play. And those are all really important skills for these children to learn. I think, though, you know, we're looking at kids on the spectrum, but I think that's really critical for all kids with special needs, because when you think about what one of the primary complaints or concerns that I hear from parents when their children get older, and this cuts across all types of special needs, the number one complaint is not going to be about academics. The number one complaint I hear is they don't have any friends. They're lonely. And I think it's important for schools to be aware of this and to foster interchange and to foster socialization, but it also is going to be important for the parent to seek out opportunities, to invite kids to the house, to have supervised play dates, and to really emphasize that social development.
It sounds like there's so much to learn, and it's very difficult to negotiate the system and make sure your child gets what he or she needs.
I have to tell you, I think that challenge is enormous. It's very important for parents to develop early on a support system, and that might be family, that might be friends, that might be other parents who have children with the same types of special needs. And sometimes you can find it just by going online. There's just a world of support groups on the internet. My only caution is check them out. You know, you don't want to be getting involved with individuals who are, you know, claiming miraculous cures and extreme treatments, because it's very easy when someone is in the quest to fix the problem to get caught into very expensive, very misleading treatments that are not research-based and that actually will be very time-consuming and will happen at the cost of other interventions that might have been better. your child's going to be going through public school and you have good services in the school, it's important to start making those contacts early on. If your schools are not providing adequate services, and this is a real problem today, it's a huge problem actually for many, many children to access services in the schools, then it's going to be important to speak with people who can act as an advocate for you when you go into these meetings, when you go into set up the IEPs and set up these programs, especially if you yourself as a parent are not knowledgeable in the field. And most parents are not. Finding a support system, finding experts that can help you and give you advice, talking to people, speaking with parents who have been through this before, that's a great starting point.
Can we talk a little bit about this idea that, like, sometimes I hear people throw out the line, well, we all have special needs or we all have our challenges, as we were just talking. What's the fine line there between being tolerant and understanding but also just sort of being offensive? Because, as
right.
you mentioned, if you're not living with this kid 24/7 or with this disability, you don't know, and it isn't just like the challenges that you are facing every day.
Exactly.
It's actually different.
Exactly. It's a great point. I'm now seeing the others. I go to staffings all the time, and I'm constantly going back and forth with some of these schools and some of these districts to get many of these children the right kinds of services. Now what I hear is kind of similar to what you're saying. So we talk about a problem that this child is having, and the school will say, oh, that's very typical for students in fifth grade. That's very typical for students in third grade. Well, no, it's not typical for students in those grades. And even if it is somewhat typical, the amount of work that the child has to put in to have that behavior or to hit that goal is 10 or 12 or 20 times more than a typical child has to. There's no hard and fast rules, but there's a few guidelines to think about when we talk about special needs. Number one, is the behavior that the child is demonstrating, is that behavior age appropriate? Number two, I look at the impact that the behavior, the severity of the behavior. So again, look at temper tantruming, right? If we have a three-year-old and a three-year-old has a temper tantrum once in a while, that's...
Or passes quickly.
Right, or it passes quickly. They can calm themselves. They've got strategies to calm themselves. If we have a three-year-old that is tantruming six, seven, eight times a day, that's not typical. So age appropriateness, degree of how, you know, of the behavior and what's happening, and then how much does that behavior impact on that child's ability to function? Does that behavior prevent them? Does it make them less accessible for learning? Does it make them less accessible for socialization? So if any of those three are in place, those are red flags. And we should not be saying to parents, well, everybody's got special needs, everybody's got something. It's true. Everybody is diverse in their learning style. Everybody is different. But typical learners and typical students will come up with strategies, often on their own, right, for how to access the curriculum, how to make friends, how to navigate difficult situations. They come up with strategies for problem solving. That's not the case with many kids with special needs.
But it's so hard to walk that line between
right.
understanding
right.
someone and trying to empathize with them, but also admitting you don't know what they're going through.
That sense of isolation that many parents feel when they get a diagnosis or when they... You know, when their child is going through all of this and the parents are thinking, oh, I'm the only one going through this, that sense of isolation, I think, is really harmful. So letting parents know that even if you don't understand what they're going through and even if you're not walking a mile in those shoes, you're there for them. But you're there if they want to have a cup of coffee and talk. And don't offer advice. Just listen. All you have to do is listen and nod and say, you know what, that has to be really hard for you. And I think that support all by itself is going to be incredibly helpful for a lot of parents. We don't want them to feel that they are alone going through this. Everybody needs to have someone there that they can just pick up and say, oh, my God, I feel like I'm going to, you know, shoot myself, shoot my kid and shoot myself. You know, you parents will get frustrated, and they just sometimes need someone to talk to say, you know what, Let's just go out for a few minutes. Let's just go and talk. And sometimes you can give advice that's good, but you don't have to. You just really need to be there to listen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes parents can process a lot of feelings just by talking them through.
Thank you for listening to the Union for Reform Judaism's Parenting Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast, find more resources, including links and discussion guides, and let us know what you think at urj.org/parents.